Iran says it understands Turkey's security concerns, but is opposed to any form of military action inside Syria. Fears are growing of the Russia-Ukraine war spreading to neighboring countries, as Belarus says it's downed several Ukrainian missiles. North Korea says the United States only wants to attain military supremacy over the Asia-Pacific by hyping up the threat posed by Pyongyang. Good day, everyone. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Good to have you with us. Top story this hour, Syrian president has hailed Iran as part of the solution to problems in the region. In his meeting with Iranian foreign minister in Damascus, Bashar al-Assad said that collective regional efforts are needed to resolve problems in the region, noting that Damascus welcomes any solution that would keep Syria away from war. The Iranian minister also condemned Israeli violations of Syria's territorial integrity. He said the silence of Western countries, which claim to advocate human rights, exposes their double standard. As regards Turkey's plan to launch a military operation inside Syria, Amir Abdullahian said Iran understands Turkey's security concerns, but opposes any form of military action in the Arab country.
Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian has met Syrian President Bashar al-Assad in Damascus. They discussed cooperation relations in which Assad described ties between both states as an alliance of will in the face of Western hegemony. During the meeting, the Syrian president touched upon the threats of Turkey to launch a new offensive in Syria. Assad said Turkish pretexts for an aggression on Syria are false, misleading and disconnected from reality, stressing that they violate the UN Charter and international law. Amir Abdullahian said Assad's recent visit to Tehran constituted a turning point in Syrian-Iranian relations. He added that Israeli attacks on Syria are part of the terrorist war on the country. The top Iranian official noted that Iran is ready to help settle misunderstandings between Damascus and Ankara.
Any foreign intervention in Syria complicates the situation. We understand Turkish concerns over border issues. The solution lies in dialogue between Syrian and Turkish security officials. I understand from my talks with the Turks that they prioritize a political solution.
Amir Abdullahian also had a separate meeting with his Syrian counterpart Faisal al-Maqdad. He expressed optimism over solving the Turkish-Syrian conflict peacefully, asserting Iran will exert all efforts to prevent any conflict in Syria. Maqdad welcomed Iran's efforts.
Any solution that leads to Turkey's retreat from Syrian territories, stopping its attacks on the country, and ending Turkey's support to terrorist groups is welcomed. We trust the Islamic Republic of Iran, but not the other side.
Maqdad reiterated Syria's determination to eliminate terrorism and thanked Iran for its support. He stressed that Israel must realize that Syria will not remain silent over Israeli aggressions.
The visit shows the depth of ties between the two allies and the crucial role Iran plays in the region, as it comes hours after an Israeli attack on Syria and amid speculations that Turkey is going to launch a military operation in the Arab country. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
It's been 15 years since Press TV was launched. The platform says that it wants to be a voice for the voiceless and has tried to be an alternative for the vast and wealthy mainstream media corporations. 15 years on, Press TV is standing tall, despite multiple attempts made to shut the channel down, be it online or on air.
To try to provide a different narrative against what is produced by the mainstream media is not an easy job. That's what Press TV has been trying to do all along. The coverage of issues like the Israeli regime's daily atrocities in the occupied Palestine, U.S. war crimes in countries like Iraq and Afghanistan, and the U.S.-backed Saudi war in Yemen, and the very fact that the hypocrisy on the part of the so-called mainstream media has brought Press TV on the wrong side of many people.
I think Press TV had a huge amount of success, certainly in the early years. Of course, they've faced a lot of pushback. Of course, the Zio Western media controls satellites, it controls a lot of the media output. So in more recent years, of course, there's been a tacit campaign, a concerted campaign, to try and stop Press TV being able to get as far as it could. YouTube have been involved. Many of the SAT channels, which are owned by Murdoch over here in the West, also turned on them. But nonetheless, there is a real substantial audience of Press TV which is picking up those lives and then sharing it across social media.
Press TV has faced hardships and bans since the very first days of its launch. Perhaps the most notable of such bans was in June 2021 when the channel's web domain was seized by the United States. In fact, by shutting down Press TV, the US decided for 1.4 billion English-speaking people on the planet that they can no longer watch and listen to news that goes against the US narrative.
While Press TV has faced bans on numerous occasions in the past years, its Facebook page, with over 4 million followers, was arbitrarily removed. Its entire YouTube channel was deleted and banned from using Google services. And in 2012, it was taken off air in the UK by the country's media regulator, Ofcom.
But why is it that a platform like Press TV faces so many restrictions? A recent poll by the Reuters Institute for the Study of Journalism paints a grim picture for the mainstream media. Not only they are losing their viewership, but their viewers also trust them less.
Trust in news is also declining and is lowest in the United States. On average, 42% of people said they trust most news most of the time.
Such news is not good news for the mainstream media, of course. People tend to turn to other sources of information that offer a different narrative, such as Press TV.
So the reality is that the Western media has played an absolutely diabolical role in terms of its kind of balanced reporting on West Asia as a whole. So not only Palestine, but Yemen, Syria, Iraq, Iran, that whole region, Western media has essentially been part of the terrorism that has been wrought on the entire region by Western imperialist military forces. The media in the West has really ridden shotgun and supplemented the psychological operations aspect of whatever they wanted to do in that region. What they want to do is obviously to subjugate the Yemenis, subjugate the Iraqis, subjugate everybody in that region to continue to maintain their hold on energy resources and various other geopolitical interests.
To get a glimpse of just how different Press TV is from other mainstream media, one can look at an open letter signed by more than 2,000 Canadian journalists last year about how biased their media is towards Israel.
Anyone who has worked in a Canadian newsroom has encountered the reluctance or resistance in covering Israel and the occupied Palestinian territories. Canadian style guides still ban the use of the word Palestine in their coverage.
After publishing the letter, some journalists even published another letter saying they fear retaliation over publicly discussing such matters. In a world where mainstream media even censors their own journalists for using the word Palestine, it is no wonder that a platform like Press TV has faced so many hurdles and bans.
Now moving on, Belarus warning neighboring Ukraine against performed provocative acts. It says that Ukrainian forces fired missiles toward its territory. President Alexander Lukashenko says his forces intercepted several missiles coming from the direction of Ukraine 3 days ago. This while intense fighting is underway in eastern Ukraine, where Russian forces are inching closer to the capture of Lysychansk. Kyiv has conceded that the city could soon fall. Ukraine's last remaining bastion in Lugansk is located across the river from Severodonetsk. That's another major city that fell to Russians just last week. With Lysychansk in their hands, Russian troops will be able to move further into the Donbas region. Meantime, in Russia's border city of Belgorod, three people were killed and several others wounded in blasts. Local officials say that dozens of apartments and private homes have been damaged or destroyed. So far, no reactions from Kyiv. Moscow has cut gas exports to Italy by 15%. The Italian government has played down the consequence of Russia's decision, but there are serious concerns among the people about surging energy prices.
The recent decision by Moscow to cut its gas supply to Rome by 15%, which was announced by fuel giant Eni earlier this week, did not catch the Mario Draghi's government off guard, albeit consumer confidence in Italy is at its lowest level in over 20 years. On Saturday, Italy's ecological transition minister Roberto Cingolani said he remains confident that filling underground gas storage to 90% by winter, a requirement recently adopted by the Council of the European Union to strengthen the bloc's energy security, is still a feasible target. However, Minister Cingolani argued he expects prices to further surge, particularly after a temporary closure of the Nord Stream pipeline for maintenance.
We are definitely concerned over our gas supplies. Having said that, underground gas storage on our territory has been filled to almost 60%. So, let me tell you, we are doing fine in that respect.
Italy is trying to wean itself off Russian gas, which currently accounts for 40% of total gas imports. That's while prices in the country were 8% higher in June than a year earlier, marking the highest one-month increase in prices since 1986. The energy crisis has been compounded by an unprecedented drought that is sweeping through Italy's northern and central regions. Experts have warned the drought will reduce the country's hydropower output by 60% by the end of this year.
The problems are multiple, and we will not only face the energy crunch and the water shortage, but also the financial turmoil that will inevitably hit the international markets. Let's sit tight, because a financial shock is on the way, and it will start from the US as usual.
Lately, Prime Minister Draghi has been facing problems protecting the government coalition that supports him. A rift has opened up with former Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte. Also, former Deputy Prime Minister Matteo Salvini has reportedly taken up arms against the executive. A government collapse at this very stage could have grave repercussions for Italy's social stability. Max Civili, Rome.
North Korea expressing concerns about a U.S., South Korea and Japan plan to build a military alliance similar to NATO in the region. According to the Foreign Ministry, Washington's allegations about a threat coming from North Korea are nothing but an excuse to attain military supremacy over the Asia-Pacific. The official says, and that's why Pyongyang needs to urgently build up its defenses to cope with a rapidly worsening security situation. Leaders of the U.S., South Korea, and Japan met on the sidelines of a NATO summit last week. There they pledged to work together on an extended deterrence against North Korea. In Australia, thousands of Sydney's residents will have to leave their homes as flooding hits southeastern parts of the city. More than 200 millimeters of rain was reported in many areas. Local dams and rivers are starting to spill. The Weather Bureau is warning of a serious risk of flash floods and landslides. Officials are asking people to avoid unnecessary travels. The government says that emergency services and military troops are on standby to help people. The rainfall will continue for at least the next 2 days. Lebanon's Hezbollah says its message was delivered to Israel after it launched drones at a natural gas field in the Mediterranean that's at the heart of a dispute with the occupying regime. The resistance movement says that the reconnaissance drones dispatched to disputed Karish field accomplished their mission. Israel claims it intercepted the aircraft. The regime says it's planning to begin extraction operations in the area, and that's despite warnings by Hezbollah and high-ranking Lebanese officials that they would not remain silent. They say Tel Aviv's operations are an effort to plunder the Lebanese maritime natural gas resources. From Beirut, our correspondent Mariam Saleh explains that the Hezbollah drones actually reinforce an earlier warning by the resistance movement to Israel.
We heard from the Israelis first saying that they downed some three drones, and they did mention that they are unarmed. And then we had a very brief statement from Hezbollah saying that these drones that were sent were unarmed, but they were sent for a specific message, and that they believe that this job has been accomplished and that the message has been received, as they say. And of course, the resistance is sending another message as similar to the one that was direct message by Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah, who had said that the Israelis should not have any activities in the disputed areas. And we do have reports that there is a vessel which is somewhat of a ship that is used in order to drill out the natural resources in that area, and it is in the Quraysh field. And Sayyid Nasrallah has warned that any disputed in the disputed area, this should not happen.
We got one more news item for you. A report, actually, hundreds of thousands of Muslims from all over the world have congregated in the city of Mecca to visit the Holy Kaaba. The first step to start the pilgrimage is a particular state of purification known as Ihram. Our correspondent has a report from Mecca.
As hundreds of thousands of Muslims embark upon a pilgrimage to the Holy Kaaba in Mecca, they must enter a particular state of purification and sanctity known as the Ihram. In Arabic, Ihram means prohibition and a state of holiness. Ihram is an obligatory prerequisite to Hajj. Muslims stop at a designated station to perform the rituals associated with wearing Ihram. The stations of Miqat are the five prescribed places for Ihram, located at different directional corners from the holy city of Mecca, Saudi Arabia. Pilgrims perform ablution and cleanse their bodies. Then they wear ihram and make niyat, the intention of performing hajj. Men are required to wear two pieces of white cloth that are unadorned and plain. Women are not required to conform to a specific dress code, but have to dress modestly. It is crucial to ensure that the clothes are neat and tidy. Ihram also resembles the shroud used to wrap dead bodies before they are buried. Therefore, it's a reminder of how death comes unannounced and does not discriminate between anyone.
After cleansing their bodies and wearing ihram, Muslims get ready for the journey to the holy city of Mecca, and they will visit Kaaba. Mahdi Abbasian, Medina.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
Listeners special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, July 3rd, 2022. I'm Atefa Irfani, hosting this program today. As you may know, Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, or messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about IRIB English radio programs. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, then you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard. Remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. So please don't go away and keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, your program, and as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers at IRIB English Radio. You know why? Because these reception reports enable us to provide a better service to our great listeners around the world. So, all of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an eQSL card or an electronic QSL card from us. So, here, I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Najmuddin from Bangladesh, Francis Lawlor from Ireland, and Federico Correa from Italy. So, Najmuddin, Francis, and Federico, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to your radio, IRIB English Radio. And dear listeners, a million thanks to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us emails from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here. And later during the program, I will read these emails. Here we've received an email from Siddhartha Bhattacharji from India, one of our old and regular listeners. Robbins Ferraz Pedroso from Brazil has sent us an email. Najmuddin, who has sent us a reception report this time, has sent us an email from India, of course. Wu Xianun from China has sent us a message, an email. And from the Netherlands, one of our regular listeners, Rob den Boer, has sent us an email. Stay with us. Please, after a short break, I will be back with these emails. So, here we've received an email from one of our old and regular listeners called Siddhartha Bhattacharji from India. Let's see what Siddhartha says. Here, I submit audio file of your broadcast. Hope it will be a great help for you and your technicians. Kindly send me your program schedule, calendar 2022, sticker, stamps, and other promotional material, which is available in order to represent your radio here in India. Be safe and fight against coronavirus. Hope all of your staff are safe. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Siddhartha Bhattacharji from India. And many thanks for sending us this email. My colleagues will soon send you an electronic QSL card as a verification and confirmation to you. And regarding your request, Siddhartha, about sending you program schedule or calendar or sticker stamps, generally, the promotional items of IRIB English Radio, you know, at the time of pandemic, sending any material on behalf of IRIB English Radio to our great listeners is not possible. Maybe after the pandemic is erased from around the world, we can send you the souvenirs of IRIB English Radio. And regarding your wish about being safe against coronavirus, let me tell you good news. It's for some days that, actually for a month, that the rate of coronavirus death across Iran has become zero, and Iran does not have any victim from coronavirus anymore. And I can tell you for sure that the mortality rate of coronavirus in Iran has become zero, and there are just a few cases of this virus in Iran, because almost all of Iranians have been vaccinated against this virus, and we are so happy that our Iranian fellow people are safe and immune against coronavirus. Thank you for your wish, and here I wish that all our listeners and all people around the world be safe against this virus, including in your country, India, and around the world. So we wish you all the best, Siddhartha Bhattacharji. Please accept our electronic QSL card for the time being. And Robens Fras Pedroso from Brazil has sent us an email. Let's see what Robens says. Of course, Robens is one of our regular listeners. He says, "Dear friends, I have had the pleasure of listening to your station during its transmissions a few days ago in English. I'm living in Bandeirantes, Brazil. I am an agronomist and I have, I am 52 years old. I will be grateful if you send me a QSL verifying this reception report. That's to say, you please send me a letter or a card where you include a specification that I have really heard your station, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting." First of all, salam and warmest greetings to you, Robens Faraz Pedroso from Brazil. Thank you very much for sending us this email. Of course, we will send you an electronic QSL card as a verification for the email you sent to us. Write to us soon. And Robens, why don't you tell us your views about IRIB English radio broadcast? So, after a short break, I will be back with other great emails from around the world. And from China, we've received an email from Wu Xianun. Let's see what Wu says. "I am a radio listener in Shenzhen, China. I hope you can issue me a radio listening certificate card or QSL to prove my listening. I hope your station provides the listeners with a QSL card, schedule, flag, etc. Salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, Iran, and of course IRIB English Radio to you, Wu Xianun from China. We're so happy that the signals of our radio, of course your radio, IRIB English Radio, are well received in Shenzhen, China. Thank you very much for sending us this message. Of course, we send you an electronic QSL card as a confirmation. Yes, regarding your request about sending you schedule, our frequency schedule is available at our website at www.parstoday.com/en. Yes, there you can find our frequency schedule, but sending you any material at the time of pandemic around the world on behalf of IRIB English Radio is not possible. So for the time being, please accept our electronic QSL card, Wu Xianun from China. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our broadcast. And again, from India, we've received an email from Najmuddin. Najmuddin says, "To the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting IRIB in English. Assalamu alaikum. Please find the reception report of me received here in Murshidabad, West Bengal, India. I heard a piece of Islamic music as well as my very favorite program, Listeners Special, in which listeners' letters, mail, and messages are read. Kindly send me new program and frequency schedule, printed QSL card with some used postage stamps." Salam and warm greetings to you, Najmuddin from India. Thank you very much for sending us this email. Please accept our warm gratitudes and appreciations to you for sending us this email. So The signals of IRIB English Radio are well received in Murshidabad, West Bengal, India, and that makes me so happy. So, your favorite program is Listeners Special, and that's great. My colleagues, of course, will send you an electronic QSL card as a confirmation, and the frequency schedule is available at our website at www.parstoday.com/en. And sending any souvenir or material at the time of pandemic is not available. So, for the time being, please accept our, of course, electronic QSL card. Najmuddin from India, we are looking forward to hearing from you soon. And after a short break, I will be back with other emails from around the world. Welcome back from Netherlands. We've received an email from Rob Den Boer, one of our regular listeners. Let's see what Rob says. To the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's Broadcasting English Service, it's my pleasure to confirm your broadcast, and I hope my report is correct. My name is Rob Den Boer and live in the city of Heinoord in the Netherlands. Please listen to my audio recording attached, waiting for a reply from your side. Salam and warm greetings to you from IRIB English Radio and from the Islamic Republic of Iran. Thank you very much for sending us this email, Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands. So you live in Heinoord in the Netherlands. I wish I'm right in pronouncing the name of the city you live. Because I don't know Dutch. Anyway, thank you very much for sending us this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English radio programs. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands. Yes, we received with honor your audio recording and we listened to it. Thank you for that. Please write to us soon and tell us your views about our broadcast. And we wish you all the best. So before we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special, I want to send my warm gratitudes and appreciations to those of our great listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports and emails from around the world, including Najmuddin from Bangladesh, Francis Lawlor from Ireland, Federico Korea from Italy, Siddhartha Betacharji from India, Robbins, Faraz Pedroso from Brazil, Wu Xianan from China, and Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands. Please write to us, tell us your views about our broadcast, and keep in touch with us. Be safe and stay safe and healthy. We wish you all the best. Have a good time and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to englishradio@irib.ir. That is one word, englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pastoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pastodayenglish. Thank you all for being with our RIB English Radio.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
It's called the New Force Model by NATO, in which it says it is a new strategic concept, one that describes Russia as the most significant and direct threat to allies' security and stability. Now we ask, what is so new about that? Meanwhile, Russia has reacted and has accused the U.S.-led NATO of aggressive containment of Russia. In this edition of the Spotlight, we'll review the NATO summit's communique, which also includes how it has described China of being a threat to the world order.
Leaders of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization gathered for their annual summit in the Spanish capital, Madrid. As expected, this year's summit turned into an anti-Russia agenda in the wake of growing tensions between Moscow and the West over the Ukraine war that began in February.
President Putin's war against Ukraine has shattered peace in Europe and has created the biggest security crisis in Europe since the Second World War.
The Western Military Alliance also pledged to ramp up military support for Ukraine.
And today, leaders agreed to strengthen our support by agreeing a comprehensive assistance package for Ukraine. This includes equipment to counter mines and chemical and biological threats, and hundreds of portable anti-drone systems.
Western countries, including the United States, have provided Kiev with billions of dollars worth of weapons since the war began. Russia sees it as the main factor behind prolonging the conflict.
It seems to us that the kind of line that the West has taken is absolutely counterproductive and harmful. The more they pump weapons into Ukraine, the longer this conflict will last.
Irrespective of huge military support for Ukraine, NATO's ambitious plan for expanding its membership has also driven a wedge between the alliance and Russia. However, NATO leaders have welcomed Finland and Sweden into the alliance after Turkey struck a deal with the Nordic duo to drop its objections.
Today, NATO leaders took the historic decision to invite Finland and Sweden to become members of NATO. The agreement concluded last night by Turkey, Finland and Sweden paved the way for this decision.
Russia says the two countries' accession to NATO is destabilizing.
We consider the expansion of the North Atlantic Alliance to be a purely destabilizing factor in international affairs. It does not add security either to those who are expanding it, those joining it, or to other countries that perceive the alliance as a threat.
The rift between Russia and the West has raised concerns that the ongoing war in Ukraine could escalate into a nuclear conflict, the fallout of which could deal devastating blows to the world.
Our guest joining us for this edition of the Spotlight. Daniel Kovalik, an international human rights and labor lawyer, joins us from Pittsburgh, PA. Also joining us is Kent Stone from the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War, who joins us from Hamilton, Ontario. Welcome to you both.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Ken Stone, I'm going to first start with you. What do you think about the name New Force Model, which NATO describes as a new strategic blueprint in which the U.S.-led NATO is referring to Russia based on this as a direct threat to the security of the member states? And then my question to you is, what is so new about this? And even if it's true, who provoked this sentiment for Russia to become, as they perceive, a security threat?
Well, it's not new at all. As a matter of fact, when Lester B. Pearson, who was Foreign Minister of Canada, proposed the formation of NATO, before 1949, his view was to bring down socialism in the former Soviet Union, and to actually bring down the Soviet Union. So NATO has been a threat, an existential threat to Russia for 70 years. And once the Soviet Union dissolved itself, rather than dissolving NATO, which was supposed to be dealing with a supposed Russian threat, NATO went on the warpath and showed its true colors. It is the aggressive military alliance led by the United States, which promptly in the 1990s went against the former Yugoslavian Federation. It attacked it, bombed it for 78 days, and destroyed it, and swallowed up its component parts. Then it went after Afghanistan, and then it went after Iraq, and then it went after Libya. So the U.S. Has NATO in its pocket as an aggressive military alliance. The U.S., when the Soviet Union dissolved itself, wanted to become the only superpower in a unipolar world, and that's what they're trying to do today in Madrid. They are saying that Russia is the enemy, and Russia does not want to be seen as its enemy.
Okay.
Okay.
You make some good points there. I'd like to, however, move on to this timeline, Daniel Kovalik, which was highlighted just a few weeks back, and that is the fact that this war passed 100 days. And that was obviously a very grim milestone in a sense. But in reality, this war has been going on now for 8 years, hasn't it? And if you want to even go further than that, we can, because Russia has been seeing NATO's eastward expansion for all this time, hasn't it? It's been provoked, whether directly by NATO and its moves, but even more so maybe by the U.S. in terms of the way that it has treated Russia in terms of sanctions, in terms of just making it and a national security threat based on the way that the U.S. sees it. So is it a surprise that Russia has acted out the way that it did? Again, I need to make a note here that we are not for war. We're not advocating war by this question. But, you know, when you push somebody so much for such a length of time, then my question to you is it a surprise that Russia has acted out?
No, and I've written about this. I mean, first of all, I've been writing about this for years, that this was a risk, that eventually Russia probably would react the way they did because of, as you say, NATO expansion that really began in earnest under William Jefferson Clinton, even after numerous promises were made by James Baker and others that NATO would not move an inch east of Germany if the Berlin Wall came down, which it did, but the U.S. and NATO never upheld their part of that bargain. And you mentioned, of course, in 2014, the coup against the government in Ukraine, which the U.S. was behind, and the U.S.-backed ultra-right-wing forces that very quickly made it clear that they wanted to ethnically cleanse the Russian ethnic Russian population from the eastern part of Ukraine. We see the New York Times in the past week has said what a lot of us have known for a while, that the CIA has been operating in Ukraine for some time, training and giving logistical support to armed forces that target Russians in Ukraine. So really what's happened in Madrid is simply an announcement of a position of a strategy that's existed for a long time, which has been the dismantling of Russia. I think that, you know, in the light of day now, as the years have passed, we can now honestly and truthfully say that the Cold War never really ended, that the Russians fully expected it would end with the collapse of the Soviet Union and the East Bloc in 1991. But for the West, it never ended, that was not enough, that it wasn't just about communism. It was about Russia as well, and it was about China as well as potential adversaries. And now we know this, and now NATO is being very clear that their intention is to drive Russia into the ground.
Well, Kent Stone, when you take a look, I referred to a timeline there to Daniel Kovalik. When you take a look at the length of this war, the way that the U.S. has approached it in particular, and then you take a look at what has happened in this summit, where NATO felt that there needs to be a new rejuvenate this anti-Russia sentiment in a new form. It's almost like it's being reintroduced. Is there a possibility that they're doing that because they want to make sure that the threat or the perceived threat of Russia still exists among member states led by the U.S., which is ramping up, in a sense, scaremongering, so that that remains and people or the countries don't falter from that course?
Well, it's clear to me and to people in the peace movement that what NATO is doing in Ukraine is to march NATO up to the borders of Russia, of the Russian Federation, and do to Russia what it did to the former Yugoslavia. That is to say, to defeat it militarily and then to dismember it, the better to gobble it up. It's part of the U.S. plan, with the help of its military alliance, NATO, to achieve hegemony over the entire world. After they supposedly get the defeat of Russia, the dismemberment of the Russian Federation, then they will move on to China. That's the plan. And it should be clear to everyone in the world. It's clear to us here in the peace movement, and it's clear to people who are demonstrating in Madrid today and having counter summits. And it's clear to the workers who are in Spain and Greece and other countries who are preventing supplies, military equipment for, of NATO going to Ukraine, that the NATO has, and the U.S., of course, has a warlike agenda. Their plans to expand their strike force, to label Russia as an adversary, and to label China as a threat, is clearly antagonistic to our desire to have a peaceful world where all countries are their sovereignty is treated with respect. But that's not the case with NATO. When the U.S. decides that it wants to force a country to yield its energy resources, as in the case of Libya, or its strategic position in the case of Afghanistan, it unleashes NATO upon that country and creates havoc. It destroys whole countries and turns their population into refugees. And this is what we've seen over and over again in the past 30 years. And yes, the U.S. is trying to marshal its European vassals, and I say vassals because they can be herded, even though it's like herding cats. They can be herded and turned against an alleged enemy of the U.S. on the snap of its fingers, and they can even be persuaded to impose sanctions which cripple themselves rather than the supposed target. Right. There's going to be terrible results in Europe and North America as a result of the sanctions that have been leveled against Russia. And that's why we've been demonstrating this week all across Canada against NATO, demanding Canada get out of NATO, demanding that NATO disband, and that there should not be a new arms race, which is being provoked by NATO, by sending all these arms into Ukraine, and to insist on countries like Canada upping its military spending to 2%. In Canada, it means a 70% increase in military spending. It's outrageous.
Well, we're looking again at what the U.S. President Joe Biden has said, Daniel Kovalik, in terms of pledging more military aid, in terms of more, things like warplanes and warships for Europe. $5 billion in U.S. aid, or maybe a little more than that, has been pledged during the Biden administration. But at the same time, we're seeing that Russia is not losing the war. Russia is going ahead with what it's doing, especially in the Donbas region. And it's interesting how NATO nor the U.S. are really even stating that Ukraine is actually being defeated. Why then is the U.S. first, then the NATO partner countries, sending more weapons and pledging more aid when Ukraine is being defeated? What does that say?
Well, we know why. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, about 6 weeks ago, I guess it was, made it very clear that the goal in Ukraine is to weaken Russia. That is to say, the U.S. will continue to support the war effort in Ukraine, regardless of whether Ukraine can win or not. They can't.
Well, tell us what you think he means when he says weaken Russia. You either weaken a country that's at war by either killing their soldiers or for that country to run out of ammunition. Which is it?
Well, I think they want to kill their soldiers. They want to continue to have U.S. or Russia send soldiers to Ukraine and be killed. And yes, they want them to use up weaponry. They want their government to spend their revenue, of course, some of which the U.S. has stolen, on weapons and soldiers instead of on the economy and building up the economy and putting money into social programs. This is exactly the strategy that the U.S. openly, or at least after the fact, admitted, Brzezinski admitted openly later, that they used against the Soviet Union in Afghanistan. The goal in Afghanistan in the 80s was to draw the Soviet Union into a war that would undermine and destroy the Soviet Union. In the words of Brzezinski, he wanted to give the Soviet Union its Vietnam, referring, of course, to the U.S. war in Vietnam, which was very destructive of the United States. And that's exactly what happened. And it did, in fact, help to weaken and ultimately destroy the Soviet Union. This is exactly the same game plan. They wanted this war. They provoked this war. Even the Pope has said that probably this war was provoked by the U.S. and NATO. They wanted to do that. They wanted Russia to intervene. And they want to extend this war as long as possible to undermine and, if they could, destroy Russia. And they don't care about Ukraine or the Ukrainians. They will fight Russia to the last Ukrainian. That is what is very clear.
Well, let's see here. Let's refer Ken Stone to what the U.S. National Security Advisor, Jake Sullivan, has said. And let me get your reaction on this, on your reading into this. He said that Zelensky wanted to pretty much secure an advantageous position in this conflict with Russia in months. By the end of the year, it turned out was what Zelensky was referring to, rather than years. That's coming from the National Security Advisor, Jake Sullivan. What does that say when Jake Sullivan makes that statement, when he says in months is what Zelensky wants rather than years, which is what the U.S. has in mind?
Well, like our Prime Minister, Deputy Prime Minister Chrystia Freeland, the U.S. Leaders have made it clear that what they want to achieve in Ukraine, as Dan Kovalik has correctly pointed out, is to defeat Russia. And Chrystia Freeland used the words vanquish Russia and defeat it. She said that while she was donating $500 million of Canadians' taxpayers' money to Ukraine. And in addition to that, they've sent several billion dollars worth of military equipment and other kinds of funding to Ukraine. And the purpose of this is to bring about the defeat of Russia. It's the opposite. It shows that the U.S. and NATO, Canada and all the other NATO allies, have an aggressive agenda here. And they're not about to look for peace with Russia. They've encouraged Mr. Zelensky and his government to continue fighting rather than bring about de-escalation, rather than fueling the conflict with arms and funding. And now Canadian Special Forces, according to the New York Times, are in Ukraine. And we were at the minister's office in Oakville yesterday, the defense minister's office, and she doesn't deny the fact that they're there. So they're there. And so Canada is de facto at war with Russia right now because we have boots on the ground in Ukraine. It's an aggressive war. What the opposite of all this would be, as the Russians argue, there should be a mutual security system in Europe such that the security of one state doesn't impinge upon the security of others. If all the states got together and achieved a collective or a mutual security system, we could have peace. But that's not on the agenda for the U.S. and NATO. This is clearly an aggressive move, an escalation, which brings us closer to the unthinkable, as your earlier report said. It brings us closer to a nuclear confrontation between nuclear powers, and that's something that could bring about the end, that would bring about the end of human civilization. So we should think, people across the world are thinking about the danger of this, and that's why people are in the streets, because they don't want this U.S. aggressive action in Ukraine and in Madrid to strengthen NATO to bring about the end of their lives and their children's lives.
Indeed. Well, it doesn't look like that's going to happen. Danny Kovalik, Ken Stone talks about this unified security apparatus of some kind to be agreed upon, as Russia has proposed, so that, there could be a mutual approach towards this conflict. But when you have Jens Stoltenberg, the NATO Secretary General, talk about how this war is going to end on the negotiating table, and at the same breath, he says, only on the condition that Ukraine gets what it wants. I repeat, Ukraine gets what it wants. And that depends on the gains on the battlefield. How can you have a unified strategy of security when the other side is talking about what I just said?
This has never been about security. Not national security, not the security of the EU. Russia's never been a threat to the EU or to the United States. In fact, we have to be reminded that Putin was the first world leader to call George W. Bush after 9/11. Offer condolences, offer help in the war on terror. Russia always wanted to work with the West. This is not about security. This is about the West's